Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We have yet to fully understand the impact of COVID-19 on our lives, and this is especially true of the losses we've experienced among older South Dakotans. And yet, we've also been sharing since the beginning of the pandemic stories of dedicated frontline healthcare workers, innovation in elder care and resilience. And now, vaccines and a light at the end of a very long tunnel. Randy Bury is president of the Good Samaritan Society, and he joins us now with an update. Randy, welcome back to In the Moment. Thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I want to start with the good news of the day, which is the availability of more than one vaccine across the nation. And I'm wondering if you could tell us how that, since, you know, late December, has been playing out in Good Sam facilities across South Dakota.
Well, I think at this point, it's a success story. I think you hear stories in the news about, you know, trouble with supply and all kinds of things. But in the long-term care world, the partnership that was established with CVS and Walgreens and their implementation of the vaccine has really, I think, overall worked really well. 100% of our facilities, and you know, we're in 24 different states, 100% of our facilities have had their first round of vaccines for residents and staff. And about two-thirds of our buildings have had the second dose. And within a few weeks, 2 to 3 weeks, we will be completed with the second round of vaccine. And, of course, that's when the 95% immunity starts really kicking in. And so it when you say it's a light at the end of the tunnel, that is certainly a correct statement. It feels very, very good to be at this point in the process as opposed to where we were a year ago.
So just to be clear, those vaccines received their emergency authorization approval from the FDA, the Moderna and Pfizer-BioNTech vaccines, like late December. And you're saying that by the end of February, if I'm doing my math right, 100% of your facilities will have been offered the second dose. That seems like a good story. I hate to editorialize, but that does seem awfully speedy when we look at the grand scheme of things, although it's also very hard to wait that long. I do acknowledge that. Tell us a little bit about what that has been like from an emotional standpoint, because these people, perhaps more than any, have been in deep isolation. The healthcare workers and staff members have had incredible pressure on them, and these communities have seen great loss as we've lost so many elders in the pandemic. So talk about some of those vaccine clinics and when those vaccines came to some of those facilities. What was the emotional tone?
Well, you know, when you think about getting a vaccine, it's usually a pretty unemotional event, right? You go in for your flu shot or your measles shot, you know, whatever it is. And it's just kind of a routine thing. But you're so correct. You know, at the end of what really has been a nightmare in the long-term care world, at the end of this, to now have a vaccine that offers that hope for us to get back to normal, for visitations to occur like we'd like them to, for people to exchange hugs and those things. This is, you know, this was nowhere near a normal vaccine kind of process. So what you saw when there, and we're still seeing it, when the vaccine days are scheduled, there's a lot of tears shed. I mean, it's an emotional event because of what it signals. You know, it signals the certainly not the end of COVID. You know, we are never it's going to be like the flu, I suspect. We'll never totally eradicate it, but we now have a weapon that allows us to go on offense, and now we have our own weapons to bring to the table here. To prevent it from having the devastating effects that it's had in the last year. So you're exactly right. It's been a very, the vaccine rollout has its own element of emotion. There's no question about it.
It seems to me people that I'm talking to that have had that emotional response also add to it that, you know, there were days that you just couldn't admit how hard it was because you had to get through the day, and getting that shot was a, you know, was a visual representation of how difficult this has been and continues to be as well. How has compliance been? Are people saying yes to the shot as staffers and residents? I'm guessing they have some kind of choice? Is it mandatory? Tell us a little bit about compliance, please.
It is not mandatory. You know, it's still in the emergency use phase. I don't think anybody is totally comfortable with mandating a vaccine that's in the stage it is. At the same time, we have every belief that it's absolutely a safe vaccine, and we've been promoting that at every opportunity through Facebook Lives and our medical director giving talks. And, you know, we've really, really tried to emphasize the importance of it. And I would say now we're in progress, so I don't have final numbers, but it's certainly above 90%, I believe, where we'll end up with the residents. You know, this has been a virus that's impacted the elderly more than any other population in a very severe way. And so they've been very accepting of the vaccine. We've got, relatively speaking, a young workforce, and it seems like the desire to get a shot or the acceptance of vaccine, in this case with COVID, is there's a direct relationship between age and your urgency around getting a vaccine. The elderly want it, and they want it now. The younger you get, you know, and this is true certainly way beyond Good Samaritan, younger populations just do not, frankly, worry about COVID as much. And so we're seeing a lower acceptance rate among staff like every other facility in the country. But it's not over yet. And so we're working hard every day. Every Tuesday morning we have what we call incident command, where all of our leaders from across the country are on a call. And we had a leader in Kansas today saying he'd been rounding in Kansas this week and literally walking the halls encouraging vaccination of staff. So we're certainly out there promoting it, and because we want to get that number up as high as we can.
Yeah, you've hinted at this a little bit, but I want to ask you more about, you know, leadership and communication in this time. You've mentioned, you know, Facebook Live and walking the halls and talking to people and presumably listening to if they have concerns about the vaccine. What else can you say about the coordination that might be useful to other, you know, business leaders or healthcare professionals to say, like, you know, we want to make sure that we do the best possible job in communicating. This is a big organization, like you said, 24 states. Tell me what tips you might have for others about that communication.
Well, there are the broad things you can do. Like I said, we've done a lot of Facebook Live events and you know, leadership events like that, and they can be effective. I think they're a valuable tool, but I do believe that it's just like, you know, the saying that all politics are local. Leadership is also local, and there's nothing more powerful. You know, if somebody in a facility of ours in Texas, they see me on Facebook Live telling them how important vaccine is, they may or may not, you know, pay a lot of attention to that. But if their local director of nursing or if their local chief medical officer that they walk the halls with every day, that they provide care with every day, looks at them and says, listen, this vaccine is important. It's important for you personally to protect you and your family, and it's important to protect our residents. I believe in the vaccine, and I believe we should all get it. That, I think, carries more weight than anything. You have to have kind of that boots on the ground, engaged leadership at each and every one of your locations, because that's what carries the most impact.
I want to ask you about the process. You mentioned the partnership between CVS and Walgreens, and we've talked to Sanford and Avera and Monument Health and the Department of Health. How exactly has the administration gone when it comes to ordering an allotment and distribution and administration in Good Sam facilities?
Sure, and it's two really very distinct processes. You know, that with long-term care, Walgreens and CVS are contracted with the government to provide it in long-term care. So for the most part, if you're a long-term care facility in South Dakota, your vaccination was coordinated through one of those two, you know, either CVS or Walgreens. And as I said, it's gone really, really well. And then for the general public, for the vaccine rollout, that's been through the health systems of the state. And frankly, I think the citizens of South Dakota should be very proud of the work of the Department of Health, the work of the three health systems working together, because we have consistently ranked among the leaders in getting the per capita vaccinations out the door. And in South Dakota in particular, it truly is only a problem of getting the supply. I've been in South Dakota healthcare my whole career, and I'm totally convinced if we had a warehouse where we had the number of vaccines we need to vaccinate everybody in the state, you know, the three health systems would get after it and would get that done in short order through distribution to clinics and pharmacies. And we know how to do this logistically, and I think we're proving that to the country. But the supply side is the issue. You know, we just cannot get our hands on the amount of vaccine that we need. Now, again, that's separate from long-term care, because long-term care was carved out as a priority. So we are absolutely getting the supply we need in the long-term care side. And that's why, you know, we've got 100% of our facilities have had that first vaccine. In fact, I think in South Dakota, I can say 100% have had the second round of vaccine specific to South Dakota. So it's been a really effective process here.
Yeah. Will there be changes in the days ahead? Or you, I guess what I'm trying to get at here is, you know, are you wrapping up this process just on vaccinations? And then I want to transfer to, you know, sort of like what changes in the facilities themselves. But are you at the point where you're kind of on the tail end of administration of the vaccine itself?
We are, but I think it's not a process that ends. In fact, again, this morning we had a dialogue around it because, as in any business, right, we're constantly getting new residents coming into our facilities. We're having staff turnover. And so that's going to be an ongoing issue where 2 months from now, when we've had our three clinics through Walgreens or CVS, and they're gone and that program has kind of ended, and now we're getting in new employees hired and we're getting new residents coming through the door. There is a plan for ongoing vaccination to make sure that we can't just stop the vaccination process or in a given facility based on the turnover of staff and residents. You know, in a fairly short order, you could end up with a large percentage of staff and residents that were not vaccinated. And so we don't ever want any of our buildings to ever be put back in that situation. And so there is a plan to do the vaccination will not have an end date. It will be ongoing just to make sure that we can keep up with staff and resident turnover.
All right. About that hug.
What?
Talk to us about visitation and families reuniting, and where is that process? How is it unfolding?
You know, I think it improves every day. I don't think you're going to see anybody's doors swing wide open and back to what we know of visitation was like a year ago. That won't be an overnight, but it's getting a lot better. You know, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid regulates us heavily on terms of things like visitation. So we it's not like in an individual location can say, well, I think we're going to change our visitation policy today. We have to adhere to federal guidelines on this. However, we are opening I would say it this way. We're aggressive in trying to reopen. For example, when this first started, it was like, well, you can allow visitation in long-term care for what was called a compassionate visit. Well, that got interpreted to mean end of life, only in an end of life. Well, we've completely changed that, and compassionate visits can be requested just for emotional or mental duress. You know, these residents, you can't put people on lockdown for a year and have them do well. And so we're offering more and more compassionate visits where we're allowing family members to come in a controlled environment, but they can come in and do that visit. As community spread goes down through the guidelines, we are able to open up to indoor visitation. Again, very controlled. I mean, you know, face mask, distance, and those things. But at least it's a step to, you know, if you roll the clock back a year, you know, it was lockdown. It was like, okay, nobody goes in, nobody comes out, and you can visit, you know, wave at each other through a window. We've come a long way since those days, and the heavy vaccination rates are going to really, really improve and will get us out of this and more back to normal quickly. But I don't want anybody out there today thinking that we're still on this heavy lockdown, because we're able now with the vaccine and with community incident rates of community spread going down, we're able to do quite a bit that we have not been able to do until recently.
What changes permanently as far as how we think about long-term care from an expectation point for residents and their families? Like, what have we learned in this pandemic that we'll never really, we won't forget?
You know, I think the quality of care and the protection of our residents against things like the flu and common colds, things that can be fairly serious in a long-term care setting. Just this morning, again on that call with, this was a Sanford Health Incident Command call, there was, the hospitals are talking about how we're just not seeing flu. The flu this year is almost non-existent. We haven't admitted anybody with the flu. RSV, a respiratory illness in kids, is not anywhere near normal kinds of years. Well, that's a result of the infection control practices that are in place out there. And so I think in the future, one of the things that I don't think we'll lose, and frankly, I don't think we should, is adherence to some better common sense around when flu outbreaks occur. I think we will be much quicker to mask up, to start, you know, focusing on some of the infection control policies. And I'm not talking about going to lockdown at all. And that's not it. It's just practicing. It's kind of back to the basics that we've been hearing since day one on this whole COVID-19 experience. Wash your hands, social distance, wear a mask. Those simple things, I think, will continue into the future because they're effective. And we know they're effective because why aren't we having a bunch of flu cases? We have every year that I've been in healthcare, and all of a sudden this year we're not. Well, it's because of the measures that are being placed to try to prevent COVID-19. And one of the unintended positive consequences is it's pretty much stopped the flu and other respiratory illnesses. It's kind of stopped them in their tracks. And so I think that'll be good lessons to take forward.
Randy Bury is president of the Good Samaritan Society. Thank you so much for being here with us today. We look forward to our next conversation.
Absolutely. Anytime. I appreciate it.